Hey everyone, this is Kevin with English Roundtable Podcast, and I'm joined with Zane. How you doing today, Zane?
Good morning. Nice to be here. I'm doing well, thank you.
Excellent. First thing I have to ask, what kind of watch are you wearing? Because if you haven't listened, we talked about watches in one of our last episodes. You're a big collector, so what do you got?
Okay, today I've got, it's a Casio, obviously. Okay. Got to be a Casio. This is one of their higher-end dive watches.
Okay.
So it's got digital tracking on it, dive meter. You can see the depth that you've been down to.
That's
and
nice.
It tracks your history, like it logs everything.
Uh-huh.
Full titanium body, so pretty strong.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah.
What's the depth? The meter?
This one records up to 200 meters, so it's certified to 200 meters. So
it's pretty deep.
It's decent.
Yeah,
it's a lot deeper than I'll ever need to go.
Exactly.
So,
yeah. It'll do the trick.
Yeah, you've got the Apple Watch
on
there.
Yeah, I like it. We've talked in the past episode. I like watches as well, and I really would like to get back to like timepieces and wearing certain styles. But once I got the Apple Watch, it synchronizes so easily with, the phone, and I don't know. I can't get away from it.
They are amazing. I don't have one. I did borrow one off a friend for a little while, and I was just, it was almost too much for me because I would never have thought that you could have that amount of technology on your wrist.
It's everything,
It is everything.
It's like if Dick Tracy, he had the watch telephone.
That's right.
And that's where we're at. It's pretty wild.
That is where we're at. Yeah.
Pretty wild. So I can't separate from it.
It's amazing, isn't it? Yeah. I can understand why you do love it so much.
Yeah. We are pretty much cyborgs at this point, right?
It's got to that stage, for better or worse.
I know. All right. Well, that's not the topic, cyborgs, that we're going to have today. Today, I would like for us to talk about comedy, all styles. We're talking stand-up, movies, television, what have you.
Excellent.
So I figure let's always start at the base, the ground level, and how we got interested in comedy. And would you like to share first?
Yeah, certainly. So as some of you may know, I am from Australia, and Australia has an interesting comedy background, at least with my understanding of it. So because Australia is essentially an English colony, when I was growing up, I was brought up with a lot of the English comedy from the 70s, so like Some Mothers Do Have 'Em, things like that. Later on, there was things like Blackadder, and obviously Mr. Bean was in there as well. So I grew up with a lot of the early 70s English comedy.
Okay.
And then later on, got exposed to other stuff from the US. So
Very good. Yeah, maybe a little bit of the same. We have a little bit of age difference. So I don't remember the 70s as far as that goes. I remember I got into the reruns of more of the sitcoms, those types. Maybe not sitcoms, but especially like Samson and Son.
Yeah,
The
I remember watching a little bit of that.
Those types of shows.
Yeah.
Then I went into Blackadder.
Yep.
And
oh,
Mr.
So you got
Bean.
Blackadder?
Yeah.
Nice.
In America, we have what's called PBS, Public Broadcasting Service.
Yeah, I'm familiar with PBS.
Yeah.
So
it's all free. And for some reason, like every weekends, they would have like a British comedy block.
Right.
In the evening times.
Yeah.
So that's when Blackadder come on.
Nice.
Mr. Bean. I can't remember. There's a few others.
I did some research earlier today, as I mentioned before, and I'm just struggling to the names aren't coming to me.
Right. Well, that's okay. We can move forward in the years.
Yeah,
that's okay.
Yeah. Later on, in terms of English comedy, things like Black Books. I don't know if you've ever seen that.
I know it, yeah.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, that's good.
Red Dwarf as well.
I know that
80s
one,
and 90s.
Mm-hmm.
So
of course, Monty Python.
Monty Python.
I can't forget to name them.
How could I not mention Monty Python? So that's the kind of stuff that I was first introduced to. And I can remember watching that stuff when I was sort of 10, 11 years old. So that's kind of my first introduction.
You know, I got into the older stuff, like the Marx Brothers, those movies, Abbott Costello, and the Three Stooges.
Yeah, classic.
I was like, a child, I'd loved watching those.
Right.
Because they're kind of that, it's a lot of movement and action, because there wasn't a lot of talking. Especially back then, they didn't have
a lot
of speaking parts
for television
or movies. I don't think
they had the recording technology to put that in back then, so, yeah.
So just the physicality of it was really good. I even got into like the The Silence, of course, Buster Keaton. And I'm a really big Harold Lloyd fan. Right. Do you know Harold Lloyd?
I know the name.
If you there's a very iconic picture from those times of movies, and he's hanging from a clock tower. I don't know if you've seen that.
I've seen that.
But that's Harold Lloyd.
Him.
Yeah.
Okay.
And when I saw him, it just that's what really just blew my mind. I really enjoyed those. And that's what for me, that's actually what kind of started me into
right
the comedy, the physicality of it all.
Okay. So you've gone back a long way.
Yeah, I really like the old stuff.
Buster Keaton, you mentioned.
Yes.
There.
Yes.
Ah, big fan.
Really?
Discovered him recently, actually, purely by accident. Yeah. Thank you, YouTube, for that one.
Doing all his
amazing
stunts.
Yeah. The stuff that he did back then puts modern stunts to shame. And it was all actually happening. There
was
no stop footage or anything like that. Like, they were all timed real stunts.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
if they didn't go right, he could have easily died. So
yeah.
Just amazing stuff that he was doing back then.
Yeah,
so.
he was his own stuntman. He was everything.
Just amazing.
He he actually, there's a story, I think it's true, we'll have to search it, but that he broke his back and he didn't know it for years.
Right.
Because he just went through so much pain through all of his stunts and through all of the things that he had to do for his films.
Imagine that.
Yeah. The other thing that you mentioned that I liked is, because it's all real, is they had to use camera tricks for a lot of them, you know, so it would look real, like maybe someone's falling off a building, but actually it was just the way the camera was angled.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff I really liked.
So early use of technology as well. So,
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But it's amazing. I just stumbled upon him one night fairly recently and ended up watching him for hours, just clip after clip after clip, and
it's great.
I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
So I'm a recent fan of his.
All right. There you go. Yeah. Like you mentioned, it beats all of the kind of stunts that you might see today, because it's all CGI or it's on a sound stage, so it's not real.
That's right.
But yeah, I like the real stuff. That's what really excites me.
It was guaranteed realness with him.
Yeah.
That's what I like. These days, you don't know. You don't know.
Right.
I mean, there's obviously some danger to modern stunts, but... I mean, back then it was genuine. So.
Yeah. That for me, that was kind of where I got led to. And then, of course, like for America, at least in the 80s, 90s, the huge boom of comedy movies just came out.
Yeah.
And like Saturday Night Live.
Saturday Night Live.
Kind of pushed that forward.
Yep.
Like a sketch show.
Yeah. We didn't get Saturday Night Live in Australia, unfortunately. But I'm familiar with people like Chevy Chase and all of those guys, and a lot of people that was it John Belushi or
The Blues Brothers,
Blues Brothers, that kind of thing.
Yeah,
they all got their start on Saturday Night Live, I think, didn't they? Or
most Bill Murray
as well. Yeah,
a lot of those guys that had that huge boom, and some of them still do, like Bill Murray.
Mm.
Yeah, they all started pretty much on Saturday Night Live, and that's how they got big. So that was and it still is a huge kickstarter for a lot of sketch comedy and stand-up comedians.
So it's still going.
Yeah, still going. I think that was in the 70s. We're looking at 40 years, 40
that's
plus years.
Pretty good longevity in this modern age that it's still relevant enough to keep going. So
yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. And then as I got older, of course, cartoons started becoming, you know, well, they had Looney Tunes.
Yep.
Of course, but like The Simpsons, that's whenever things really hit.
Yeah.
And then you got South Park and then, you know, all of those other shows. Family Guy came from it. But yeah, those really, really got me going when I was young, as far as comedy goes.
Absolutely the same. The Simpsons for me was a game changer.
Yeah.
When I first got onto that. So I can remember watching The Simpsons as far back as my memory goes.
Oh,
so
really?
From when I was a little kid, fortunately enough, that was on TV on free-to-air network every day. So I can remember watching that, coming home from school, watching that religiously.
Yeah. so good.
It was Simpsons. Then they had an Australian show, Neighbours, in between that, and then Seinfeld for an hour or an hour.
Yeah,
so it was such a good lineup.
That is good.
Not good for my homework, but fantastic.
Yeah, Seinfeld was the other one I was going to mention.
Yeah.
And you know, a lot of people, I guess, that don't speak English, it's hard to get. There's so much sarcasm embedded in it.
Mm.
So much. But I think it's one of the best comedy shows. You know,
absolutely amazing. Larry David is, for me, about as good as sketch show writers and comedy writers get. I haven't seen anything or heard anything better. So he's the benchmark at the moment for me. So
yeah, same. Yeah, Larry David, if you're just listening, maybe, I think Seinfeld is in Japan now on Netflix.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I saw it recently. So Larry David was the co-creator of Seinfeld, and he's gone off to be one of the, I mean, most funny people, they would say, in maybe the world. Top 100.
I'd put him up there. Yeah. I can't think of anyone who tops him at the moment.
Yeah, he's up there. He's up there.
We should probably mention Curb Your Enthusiasm as well for those people listening who are interested in some more current Larry David work. I know you can find that on Unext, if anybody has Unext. Okay. I'm watching it on Unext at the moment. They've got most of the series of Curb Your Enthusiasm on there.
There you go. Is it, so is it translated? Or is
it
subtitles?
Subtitles. Okay. Subtitles.
I would love to hear the dub version, though.
I can't imagine how that would work.
Yeah.
I guess a lot of that is sort of physical comedy situations as well, and just the things that he gets into and pointless debates about things that don't matter. Mm-hmm. Kind of like Seinfeld a little bit.
Yeah, but it really is.
I don't know how Seinfeld would do here. Do you think it'd be all right?
Well, that's the thing. I've tried to. I think some of the classes that I used to teach, they used Seinfeld as an example in one of the, I don't know, classes. But I don't really know how well it went over. I remember doing it once or twice and the students having really no idea what's going on.
Mm.
Because it really is a little deep.
It can be,
You know, the comedy has nuance and it's got, again, sarcasm. And I think it was just difficult to catch what was actually happening or like what we were supposed to be laughing at.
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff going on. Like there's multiple themes per episode. And there's a lot of recurring themes that can last the entire series sometimes.
Yeah, a lot of callbacks.
That's right.
For sure.
That's right. And if you hadn't been watching the whole thing, it wouldn't make any sense to you.
Yeah, that's a good point. Very good point. So let's dive into another side of comedy with stand-up comedy.
Right.
I know we've talked off air. I'm a huge fan. I know you are as well.
Yep.
How about that? Do you remember who you kind of first started listening to or who kind of sparked your interest in stand-up?
Okay. Ooh, that's a tough one in terms of my first memories of stand-up.
Or just someone that maybe catapulted your full interest that you wanted to keep.
Okay.
Keep listening.
I did actually see, when I was younger, I was a Jim Carrey fan.
The
Mask, Dumb and Dumber, that kind of thing. Mm. And I remember seeing some of his early stand-up when I was a kid. And I thought, hey, this is actually pretty good. Mm. He's not just a sort of slapstick, silly actor. He can actually get up on stage and perform a decent show.
Yeah.
So that's one of my earliest memories. Then I got into people like Carlin and Bill Hicks and very adult political comedy like that. Fairly early on, I can remember watching that in sort of late elementary school and junior high school.
Mm.
And those guys changed my life, so to speak, just hearing them make everyday situations and very political hot topics, make jokes about them.
Mm.
It made me realize that, hey, it doesn't have to be serious all the time. You can enjoy these themes, even though they are super political and controversial. So,
Well, I think that's why I like stand-up so much, is because it can take these serious situations that get totally out of context, pulled out of context, especially these days, and they're able to make a joke out of it.
That's right.
And have comedy to it. And then they actually make, you know, they make it make sense through laughter.
Yeah.
Which is even better.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that's something, especially like in Japan, I don't think it would, it doesn't, it, I don't think it translates. Or I don't think it can translate very well.
I can't imagine it doing very well. I often watch people like Hicks and Carlin on YouTube, and I've played my wife some of the clips, and she kind of laughs a little bit at it, but I don't think it really gels with what she's used to, possibly.
Well, I'm thinking even in Japan, I don't, in a moment we're going to go through the different styles of comedy in Japan that they have.
Yeah, definitely.
But I just don't think even in the Japanese language it could work, because it, you know, there's, we don't, it takes a lot of sarcasm and stretching the truth, like a lot of hyperbole in comedy and stand-up. Because most of it's just saying the most ridiculous things that, like, are not real. It's a joke. It's all a joke.
Twisting of things and
right. And I just I don't know. It's just hard to know because like you mentioned your wife's you know it's difficult for her to catch it, and yeah, definitely my wife has a hard time. I mean, I don't think she could handle it. Mm, you know, you do have to have a high level of English as well.
Definitely
to get
definitely.
That,
so. That's probably where I might fall down in terms of Japanese comedy as
exactly.
well.
Exactly. Yeah.
There could just be a language barrier that's preventing me from getting certain bits.
Right.
Like I can't imagine watching high level stand up with English as a second language. In English.
Yeah.
I don't.
That'd be hard.
You'd miss so much.
Very much so.
And that could be what's happening with me in terms of Japanese comedy.
Yeah, yeah, it's definitely cultural too. It's got to be. Mm. Which is weird though, because for example, Jim Jefferies is a huge Australian comedian, and he actually came to Tokyo last year.
Right.
Did a big show.
Oh, okay.
So the thing is, even though it is cultural, it's almost made worldly. Mm. Like anybody that speaks English could pretty much understand what they're talking about.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that's good with stand-up, too, is they kind of make it so not just somebody in one region or one culture could understand it. It's almost like, you know, everybody can enjoy this.
It's a worldwide scene.
Right.
As long as you can understand English.
Yeah, exactly. So that could be it.
Yeah, I totally understand that. There's comedians that I like from Australia, a lot of them from America. So even growing up in Australia, I watched a lot of English comedians and a lot of American comedians, and all of their stuff still made sense.
Yeah,
there were occasional cultural references that I wasn't sure about. Like they might be talking about a popular cereal in America or something like that. And we didn't have it in Australia, just small things like that. But for the most part, they talk a lot about worldwide news and issues. And we knew about that in Australia, so we could understand what they were talking about.
Yeah.
And it was funny.
And not even, exactly. And not even that, just even like you said before, the everyday type of life that you can relate to, you know, family, friends, something, some instance in a restaurant, you know, those are really good too.
That's right.
I mean, you could just, almost anybody can relate to it.
Yeah.
And you know, once they say it, it's like a light goes off and, oh, why didn't I think of that joke?
That's what Seinfeld did so well,
right?
I think. Just everyday situations, and famously, it is the show about nothing as well.
Yeah.
And it really is. There are episodes where just nothing happens, but there's still a plot, and there's still things going on, and there's still a lot of activity, and it's so well written.
Yeah, that's what makes it. Yeah, the parking lot.
Yeah.
Or the parking garage episode. They're just walking around a parking garage looking for their car.
Have you ever done that?
A little bit,
I have actually done that. I mean, I've been in a similar situation, so not quite as much going on, but I've had similar things happen in a parking lot, so relatable.
Yeah.
But the way they turn that into an entire episode, amazing.
Yeah, pretty amazing. All right, let's take a look at some more of these Japanese-style comedies. There's four or five that I'll go through. One, I think, that we're familiar with is called Manzai. This has been part one of two parts that Zane and I talk about comedy. If you enjoy, please stay tuned for the next episode where we will specifically talk about Japanese comedy. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you in the next episode.